My name is Anna Maria. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anna Marie.
And of course, I'm suddenly really nervous, but it's great to see a lot of fellow alcoholics out here. You're just like me. I'm just like you. Where to begin? At the beginning. I was born down south. I was born in Alabama to a wonderful family. My parents are still together. I have a younger sister who's about 15 months old, younger than me. And we had a great childhood. I mentioned that because, you know, I can't say if you had my childhood, you'd drink like me. It was a really wonderful experience. No one in my family, immediate family, is an alcoholic. But alcoholism runs really deep on my mother's side of the family. Her father was an alcoholic, her grandfather, her uncle, and she experienced that chaos in her home. We moved north to Virginia over time. My dad was a college professor, and so we followed him, similar to maybe an Army brat. We were followed him, you know, as he was in graduate school and then got jobs at other universities. He was a drama professor, which is funny because it talks about the actor and the director in the big book. And I could kind of relate to that piece of it. We moved to Virginia when I was to Charlottesville when I was in the fifth grade. So I really consider this area home, even though I'm not the, I'm the only one in my family that still lives here. My sister and my parents are down in Georgia. Again, I had a wonderful upbringing and I attended public schools in the Charlottesville area. And I started drinking when I was in high school, like a lot of us. I should have told you my sobriety date. I just jumped right. My sobriety date is July 5th, 2000. And so I've been sober for 22 years. And this year it was significant to me because I've been sober for as long as I drank. Mm-hmm. And we all stay sober one day at a time, but that symmetry kind of means something to me. Maybe I'm growing up a little bit. I don't know, but it was interesting to meet that milestone, and I was a little squirrely over the summer with that coming up, as you do when anniversaries come up. And it was around that time that I met one of our fellows, Dale, coming to the Keswick meeting, which is one of my regulars, and he asked me to speak at this meeting, and so it really gave me something to do. And alcoholics, I think we need things to do in recovery to be of service. And that really, that invitation, I have to say, really anchored me for the summer. And so I started practicing, you know, my story and my dry live in Keswick now. And I lived out in the country for about 4 or 5 years. And I'm a little different from my family in that regard. They like to live in town. They don't understand why I like to live out in the country where, you know, I have to drive 25 minutes to work. But I started practicing telling my story in the car, and that went on for a couple weeks. And then I just stopped because, you know, when you get up here, that all goes out of your head. You just have to tell the story from your heart, you know. when I first came in, I remember hearing a lot of dynamic speakers. There were a lot of speakers available to listen to on YouTube. And I wanted to have one of those, you know, great speaking styles where I could make you laugh, I could make you cry, I could take you on these highs and lows. But honestly, my story is my story. And that's all I can give you. And there aren't a lot of dramatic highs. there are some lows that we've all experienced, that alcoholic loneliness, which all of us have experienced. That's one of the things that drove me here. So getting back to my story, when I was in high school, I started drinking. I remember that moment. I had arrived moment my junior year in high school. We had moved from the city schools and the county schools, and I was able to, I was going to reinvent myself and be part of the IT crowd. And that was my goal. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be popular. I wanted, because I wasn't enough. And so I made friends, you know, right away, the group of people that I wanted to be around. And they were really great people, really wonderful. And we, first weekend of school, second weekend of school, we all went to a party out at Lake Albemarle. And I know that there was, that we had beer and alcohol, and I, you know, started drinking. Well, I didn't hesitate to, but because I wanted to fit in. And I remember going down the long road to Lake Albemarle, and the song Smoke from a Distant Fire came on. And I just said, this is it. And I still kind of get chills from that. I just remember that feeling. I was going to, you know, fit in. And you know, I did. I was able to fit in like I wanted to. But at the same time, I was walking the line between being the person who God wanted me to be and being the person I wanted to be. The two were not aligned at that time. And what was happening is alcohol was becoming a crutch, even in high school. I don't think I drank to blackout that night, but it was pretty soon into my high school years that I was drinking to blackout. And yeah, just not remembering what I'd done, who I'd been with. And I didn't see that as a problem. I think I thought it was kind of funny in a way. It certainly didn't stop me. So I was a good student though. I was headed towards college, and that was one of my goals. And I loved UVA, and that's where I was going to go. That was the ultimate destination. And I was able to walk the line between, you know, being in this crowd that I wanted to be in and being a good student and trying to keep up appearances for my family and friends. And so I made good grades and I got into UVA. And so I think that I thought this would be another time of reinvention, that I would, you know, find my way, because I had a sense that I wasn't who I wanted to be. And I sensed that alcohol was a problem, but I just, you know, I didn't know what to do about it. And I got to UVA and the horse was out of the barn. There was no, you know, stopping me. That first weekend or Labor Day weekend, I didn't stay at the dorm with my fellow first year students. I went to Virginia Beach with some friends from town. So even then, you know, it talks in the big book. I won't read from it, but I'll just look at the, you know, bedevilments. Mm-hmm. And it's on, you know, page 52, and it talks about we were having trouble. Well, I'll read a little bit. We were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living, et cetera, et cetera. And I was not able to really make and establish strong friendships, you know, with my roommate or my suite mates. So here I was, 18 years old, thought I owned the world, off to Virginia Beach with some friends from town. And I mean, I knew them, but it wasn't like we were best buddies, but they were off for a party and I was going to join. And so we got there, and I remember we went to this club called, used to be really popular at the time, Peabody's. And there was a bar fight there. I don't think our group was involved in the fight, but I thought it was just like, wild. This is great. You know, it was another maybe I had arrived moment, because, you know, a bar fight at Virginia Beach. And there were chairs broken, and there was a wood slat that I picked up, and I held onto that wood slat. I wrote the date on the back of it, and Peabody's, and this was my souvenir. And I just thought it was great. Held onto that for a while. Finally got rid of it. But you know, that was my life in college. I was not connecting. And then the other thing is, I couldn't keep up with schoolwork the way I was partying. I was drinking and driving, driving in blackout. I'm really lucky that I didn't get a DUI when I was out there, but it wouldn't hesitate to drive while I was drinking. I made it through 2 years of college and then couldn't maintain that facade for my parents or anyone else. And so I was working retail. I'd always worked in my high school days and college days. I worked at Leggett and then I worked in the mall. So I took a job as an assistant manager and then a manager of a retail store, clothing store. And so this looked okay. And I was able to manage being an employee in a retail store and my drinking life. And I didn't have to juggle school anymore, and I could party like I wanted to. I also was in charge of my schedule as a manager. So I would work a lot of evening shifts, and that looked great because that's when we were busiest. So I felt like I was really being responsible then. So eventually, made a couple of geographic moves, one to the DC area to manage a store for about a year. And then I headed down to Virginia Beach, Norfolk area. And it was in, Virginia Beach, Norfolk area that I bottomed out with my drinking and using, and drugs became a more important part of my story. And I'll say this, that I'm really sensitive to Alcoholics Anonymous is Alcoholics Anonymous. I did use drugs, but alcohol, it was always to feed my drinking. It was always to keep that party going for me. And for me, I was able to put down drugs if it became too expensive. I remember a friend of a friend died from using a particular drug. And I said, okay, that's enough, but never with alcohol. Never with alcohol. I was going to keep going with that. So I was working retail, you know, in the Virginia Beach area in Norfolk. I had, a boyfriend who kind of helped me bridge all these different lives I was trying to manage. You know, I was an employee. He was from the Norfolk area, and so he was well established there. So I kind of had that going for me. You know, he had been fairly well known in the area. He was also a surfer, so I kind of had that surfer crowd going, and I was connected everywhere. And I discovered after hours bars there, and it was nonstop. The hangovers just got worse. And I didn't know what to do, but things were happening in my life that I don't think I was experiencing things. I was seeing things at parties that I didn't like, that really crossed the line, you know, where my values are concerned. And I was starting to get, I was troubled because my friends who I grew up with were getting married, starting families. I was going to a lot of weddings in the Norfolk area with my friends. So I could see that life was progressing, but I was going nowhere. I needed a way out. I needed a way out. And I really thought I needed a way out of Virginia Beach and that lifestyle I was living. And if I could get out of that, that I could maintain my drinking. You know, if it was just, if I wasn't going out to the bars, if I wasn't with a, you know, partying crowd, I could probably manage it. And the thing that made the decision for me was I was working at a gift store, and I was, it was in a nice part of Norfolk. It was a Saturday afternoon in February, and we didn't have a lot of traffic on Saturdays. It was usually a weekday business. It was a heavy credit card business. And a couple of guys walked into the store, and I sensed that they didn't really belong there, but I greeted them and I showed them around the store, and they said they were looking for something for their girlfriends that they missed Valentine's Day, and they left, and I didn't think anything of it. Well, about 20 minutes later, they came in again, and I was showing them around again, and something, some intuition just went click. And I tried to get up to the register and hit the silent alarm, but they were on me. And they were looking pretty shaky. You know, I think that they were seeking drug money, just looking at them and the way that they just seemed very, very nervous and with like they were withdrawing. So they were on me. The shakier of the two was holding a gun at me. And I opened that register fast. I wasn't going to, you know, try anything tricky. So I gave them all the money. And the woman who was actually in the store with me, they didn't know, was in the back doing some inventory. And they took me to the back and they wanted to get into the safe. And they thought we had more money. And I thought, this is it. We don't have any more cash. We're, you know. Well, they tied us up and they hog tied us, our ankles to our wrists. And my life didn't flash before me in that experience. It was just like, this is over. It just sounded like a freight train going through my head. And they left and we were unharmed, you know, other than the trauma of that experience. But with that experience, I thought, this is it. I need to go back to school and finish my degree. And so I got out of there really fast. My parents, always supportive. I moved in with them. I was around 29 at the time. And I started school back at UVA. And for it ended up that I'd pieced together probably another year of jumping in and out of school during the time, you know, I was partying. So I only had about a year and a semester left, and I jumped into school, and I don't think, I don't think I drank for a year, because I was so, I think so startled and so scared by the lifestyle I was living and what had happened to me. And I was so committed to getting through and finishing college. And I thought this was it. This was going to be the change, the reinvention. I could do this again. You know, I will be able to rise like a phoenix from the ashes. And it felt like that for a little while because I wasn't drinking and I was doing really well at school. And I graduated and went back to work and discovered the joys of drinking alone. And because I wasn't going out anymore, I was too scared. That went on for another probably 8 years or so, just trying to manage my drinking alone. But I would, and I pulled another geographic and went with my sister to Atlanta, Georgia for a year. But I was a solid beer drinker. That's what I loved to drink. But I would mix it up with wine just to make it look a little more sophisticated, like we were having wine with dinner, you know? Or I'd buy some vodka, and so I could hide, you know, what I was drinking a little bit better. But I was kind of where I wanted to be with the drinking. You know, I was able to drink alone and, you know, no one was stopping me. But I was also still, I was so lonely and so miserable. I moved back to Charlottesville and moved into an efficiency apartment. And this is how what a mess I was. I ran into a friend of mine who I'd partied with and dated for a little while. And it was a July 4th weekend. This wasn't my anniversary, you know, July 4th for my anniversary is several years before. And he asked me if I wanted to go to a party in the country. And I could not say no. I mean, I couldn't say no, I don't want to go. But I did not want to go. I was scared because I knew it was going to happen. I knew I would get hooked back into drinking, that there were going to be a lot of drugs there, and that it was going to be a fiasco. But I just didn't know how to talk to people anymore. I could manage at work because I was, I knew what my role was there. I knew the scripts. I knew the people. I knew how to talk. But with other people, I didn't know how to manage that. And because my drinking had isolated me for so long, and a lot of the friends that I partied with had moved on to get married and had families, I really had no one around. But I said, yeah, sure, that sounds great. Well, the July 4th came that morning. He came to my door and I had pulled all the blinds. I was in the apartment and I actually was hiding in a closet, not because, you know, he was going to break in or anything. I was just so scared. And he knocked on the door a few times and finally left. And it was at that time that I had started thinking about recovery. And I didn't really know anyone in AA, but I knew that recovery was there. I had an aunt, my mom's sister, who went to Al-Anon. I knew I had to do something. I mean, my drinking was coming home right after work. I would start drinking. So I would get to bed early, maybe pass out by 9, you know, and I wasn't getting drunk anymore. I was just drinking till I passed out. And I didn't get that feeling of ease and comfort that alcohol used to give me. That sense of fitting in, I had arrived feeling was gone, never to be, you know, found again with alcohol. So I started investigating recovery. And I went to Barnes & Noble and checked out the recovery section of the bookstore. I was reading books there, kind of sneaking through. And I don't think there was any AA-related literature there, but there was a lot of good literature on recovery. And I ended up buying this one book. I don't remember the name of it. I just remember it was a big green book. And it talked about AA and the 12 steps, and it talked about what meetings were like, and it talked about the traditions, and actually the traditions ended up being a really important thing for me, because I was like, is AA a cult? You know, am I going to get into something that is worse than the problem I now have? And I was looking for an out too, you know, I mean, because I didn't know, I wasn't fully committed to recovery. I was just investigating it. But through studying, reading this book, and then looking at the traditions, I was able to see that AA was just here to help, that there are no dues or fees, that the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, that I don't have to do anything that I don't want to. So that was really important to me. And the other part was that it described meetings, kind of real, just practical, you know, how they'll probably read the, you know, how it works. People introduce themselves, you know, and say, my name is Anna Marie, I'm an alcoholic. And just went through a couple of different scripts like that. And so I started practice saying, my name is Anna Marie, I'm an alcoholic. And I started saying that to myself in my apartment. And then I would go and look in the bathroom mirror and, you know, just kind of look at myself saying that. And didn't feel really comfortable with it yet, but it was starting to get a rhythm, a familiarity. Back in those days, the internet may have been in its infancy, but I didn't know, but I couldn't get meetings, you know, where they were online. You had to call the AA hotline. So this started a series of me picking up the phone, calling the AA hotline and hanging up. And I feel so bad about that, but I know I'm not the only one who did that, but it was just like, I thought, they're going to know me. They're going to, you know, this is it. If they answer the phone. So I finally, a couple of times, I must've been set on going to a meeting on a Sunday, and finally got a couple of meeting times on a weekend. And I ended up going to my first meeting in Charlottesville, the 2 o'clock Cherry Avenue meeting. And I got there a little late, and but I got there in time to say, my name is Anna Marie, I'm an alcoholic. And I have to say, it wasn't an I had arrived moment, but it was, I felt like I had found my place. I felt like I wasn't lying anymore. I wasn't running anymore. I was at home. It didn't always feel like that in the beginning. It took going to meetings, to 90 meetings in 90 days, and, you know, meeting other women in the program and discovering what the fellowship was all about and trying to get used to not living without alcohol. I was really lucky though, because I got in with a home group that was a big book group, and they worked the steps pretty quickly. And we met every, I think it was Wednesday night. So we read the big book, and I had a sponsor, got a sponsor right away. And I think this is my original big book. It's like the third edition. It's all in tatters now. And it's kind of cool to look through the notes and see, you know, just kind of even remembering from some of the notes what people had said. So I started work. I worked the steps. And they were big on doing a formal third step where everyone kind of gathered. So let me say, okay, so the first step, I came in and I admitted that I was an alcoholic. my life had become unmanageable. And step two, I started seeing the hope of recovery in other people, and my home group members and my sponsor. And I was ready then, because I was surrounded by a strong fellowship of recovery, I was ready then to take the third step. And I, they did a formal third step. We just, a group of people got together, and I kneeled down and said the third step prayer. And after that, I think it was the next day, I launched into doing my inventory, my fourth and then my fifth step. I was sober for about 4.5 years when I first came in, but I did relapse. And it was on a resentment. And it talks about resentments in the big book being, you know, fatal. It was because of a relationship that I was in, and I was locked on to this resentment, and I was not willing to write about it. I wasn't willing to talk about it. I was wronged, and I was going to just ride that train. And so I relapsed in 1999 for about 8 months or so. And in that time, I was made a couple of geographics. I moved to Richmond, to where my parents were. I moved to Alabama, moved back. I was drinking, sneaking vodka into my room when I was living with my parents in Richmond. And I'm lucky that it only went on for that long, because alcohol is a subtle foe. And even though it really wasn't working for me anymore, I wasn't engaged with the solution in the big book. And alcohol was the solution to my problems. It gave me that sense of being okay, or at very worst, it just numbed me out, so I didn't care. I understood, though. I realized I couldn't keep going on like that, and there was a part of me that still wanted recovery. I was still going to meetings, so that kept me in the game a little bit. You know, it kept that. I mean, there's nothing worse if you relapse than drinking and having a head full of AA. It's just as bad, because you know that there's a solution and a way out. So I got re-engaged with AA and my recovery July 5th of 2000, and found a sponsor, worked the steps. I want to talk a little bit about being dry in recovery, because I went through a long period after I came in 2000 and was very active in the program for 4 or 5 years. I became dry. I didn't go to meetings as much. I let my sponsor go. I let sponsees, I was sponsoring people, I let them go. And I became, and this to me, the lesson to me is that the problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. It's the alcoholism that's in our mind that drives this, for me, erratic, self-centered behavior, sometimes bordering on paranoia. And I pushed friends away. There's a friendship that I destroyed during this time. And it was a really reckless time for me. And I never want to go back to that either, because it was dangerous, because I didn't really have a solution. But, you know, I didn't have a spiritual solution, and there's always alcohol. So I connected with a woman who is sponsoring me today. She works the steps. She's very big into the 10th step and 10, 11, 12. And that's what I'm committed to today in my recovery. I'll just read a little bit about, if I can find it quickly. I don't think I can find it. Wait, here we go. Yes. It's in the end of action on page 85, and it says, it's about the 10th step. And it says, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day where we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. And so what she showed me was doing an inventory. I do inventory in the morning and in the evening, and I follow that by meditation. And I try to get to as many meetings as I can, and I try to help other alcoholics along the way. But what doing a daily inventory for me has shown me is that it really is my self-centeredness and my self-centered fear that drives me, that really agitates me and I think can drive me insane if I don't treat it, if I don't treat the alcoholism. I could very easily, as my experience has shown me, end up just a mean old hag alone with nobody, you know. My inventory has shown me that my fears, I wake up with a head full of fears and I write those down. It's not even resentment so much anymore that get me. I go straight to the fears because really resentments underlying that. When you do the inventory, you'll see the underlying resentments are just fears that I'm not going to get what I want. You're not going to be the person that I want you to be. And if you're not going to be the person that I want you to be, then that just starts to stir up, you know, a resentment. And I can see that on a daily basis in my inventory. Meditation has really helped relieve me of the bondage of self. I mean, nothing helps like working one-on-one with another alcoholic. I mean, that is really what is taught us in the big book. But I get a reprieve from my self-will and from my self-centered fears in meditation. And then I'm somewhat fit to go out and meet the day. And then hopefully get to a meeting. I don't get to a meeting every day, but I do have some regular meetings that I get to, and I have a home group, and they start looking out for me if I skip, you know, a meeting. And I have a sponsor, and so. Yeah, I think that I'm almost done here. recovery is the most amazing journey, I think, you know, one can ever go on. You know, it's opened up a whole world to me. Literally, when I got sober, I work at the University of Virginia. And I was able to go on, because I was a working, responsible adult, I was sober. I was able to go for two semesters on semester at sea. So I really did get to see the world. And I got to see how we were on a cruise ship with students going around the circumnavigating the globe and stopping in different countries. But on the ship, there were at least 3 or 4 of us who were in recovery who gathered on a regular basis. So I was able to see how that worked, you know, 1 or 2 alcoholics. Sometimes it was just a couple of us meeting together in one of our cabins, you know. And then I went to meetings in other countries. And I went to a meeting in Brazil. And I went with a couple of people, and we somehow found the room in this old building. And we entered, and there were the steps on the wall. They were written in Portuguese. They were speaking Portuguese. We didn't speak Portuguese, but we needed a meeting, and we were curious. So we went, and we walked in, and we had the opportunity to introduce ourselves. And, you know, said we don't speak English, and they were great. They're just like, oh, you know, we love you. And they were very welcoming. And it was a really long meeting. I think it probably went on for a couple of hours, but so we didn't stay. We weren't able to stay until the end, but when the people went up to share, it was so emotional. You could just see, you know, it's the same kind of things we see when people are telling their story in a meeting or when people are sharing in a meeting, that same depth, you know, of either misery or recovery. You could see that the way that they were talking. And so that was a really, really wonderful experience because I was able to see literally how AA works all around the world, regardless of who you are, you know, where you've been, what you've seen, it will work. And so I think I'm fading now. So I think I'm going to end with that. And I really appreciate the invitation to come out here and speak. And it's been really important for my recovery. Thank you.